Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. On today's show, did the defeat of the Senate Old Guard usher in a new era of progressive politics in New Mexico? We'll ask Eric Griego, director of the Progressive Workers' Families Party, and the person said to be most responsible for the defeat of that Old Guard. Eric Griego, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So later in the show, Eric, I'd like to get your view of the 2021 legislative session and where you think New Mexico politics is headed. But let's start with the surprising upsets in that Senate primary. And I'd like to understand what your role was and what the role of the Workers' Family Party was in those upsets.
Yeah, thanks. First I want to say that there were a large number of allies and individuals, volunteers, and activists who were part of what I consider a major sweeping victory that sort of re-centered the Democratic Party, for sure, in a much more, you can call it progressive, but we like to think it's getting back to our core values, you know. And so, yes, the Working Families Party, we were definitely in the forefront, but I have to say we were standing shoulder to shoulder with several very effective allies from all around the state. And I want to be clear that this was a collective victory.
Could we step back and just talk about who it was that was being targeted? Who were the incumbents that these groups, including the Workers' Families Party, were looking at in terms of trying to defeat?
Yeah, so for a long time, I think there were a group of, whether you want to call them corporate Democrats, conservative Democrats, you call them old guard, some people call them dinos, you know, Democrats in name only, who really were out of step with, we think, the values of the majority of the Democratic Party. The most prominent among them was former Senator John Arthur Smith, who for 30 plus years had been representing a southwest New Mexico district that was, a swing district, some people would say, but he ran as a Democrat, but most of the time, really major Democratic issues, he was solely responsible for derailing. We can talk about some of those, the Early Childhood Constitutional Amendment, which had overwhelming support from Democrats and most Republicans as well. Things like funding this Medicaid buy-in program where people who weren't poor enough to qualify for Medicaid but weren't rich enough to be able to afford their own health insurance, and there was a proposal to help them get health care that he really sat on in the Senate Finance Committee. Very powerful. The other person was the former pro tem, the president of the Senate, Mary Kay Papin, who also was very, very conservative and took her lead from oil and gas and some big powerful corporate interests and those lobbyists. Another one was someone who hadn't been around as long, but who had been very effective in undermining things or watering down things like the minimum wage, like paid sick leave, like things that we consider, those of us who work on social justice, economic justice issues, like paid sick leave, like making sure people have what they need to survive, especially those among us in New Mexico who were most challenged, like the Constitutional Amendment for Early Childhood. So Clemente Sanchez, who was sort of in the Valencia County area, also had been a real impediment. He was chairman of the Corporations Committee. These weren't sort of like randomly picked. We actually used a pretty rigorous set of criteria. We said, first of all of these folks were in alignment in what we call the corporate coalition to vote essentially with Republicans on leadership. So they all work together.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. I think that most people don't get is that there were conservative Democrats or corporate Democrats or whatever terminology you want to use, actually aligned with the Republicans to control the outcome in the Senate and specifically the Senate Finance Committee. So that basically views of that weren't aligned with conservative Democrats and Republicans couldn't get through the Senate and couldn't get through the Senate Finance Committee, correct?
That's exactly right. So that was one. Who working in essentially in a de facto coalition, That was one of the criteria. Okay, this wasn't like personal. This wasn't, we don't like John Arthur Smith or Mary Kay. In fact, some people thought they were not, some of them weren't, they're nice enough. You know, Mary Kay was nice enough to folks. It wasn't about personality. The second thing was their voting record. And in the case of most of these folks, they were out of step with the majority of their own party, right? They voted often with the other side, despite being in most of them in pretty safe Democratic districts.
And a great example is the repeal of the criminal abortion statute, right?
Yeah, that was probably the biggest example. And that's what drew in a couple of our very formidable partners like Planned Parenthood and groups like Emily's List, who released that this is absurd that we have such a strong Democratic majority in the state Senate and in the House, you know, and all the work that we had done to do that. And yet we still had this pretty small number of corporate sort of conservative Democrats who were voting against that. So the second thing was they were out of step. They voted the wrong way. So they were in coalition de facto with the Republicans. They voted the wrong way. They didn't vote with their party. The third thing was where they took their money from. This is probably the most important thing to us. It really does matter if you're taking huge amounts of money from industries that really are opposed to working families or progressive agenda. In this case, it was a lot of oil and gas money, a lot of payday lenders, a lot of private prison money, a lot of, you know, really sort of interests that were contrary to standing up for everyday working New Mexicans, right? So, and then the last one was, did they truly represent their district? Some of these folks would say, well, you know, yeah, I may be, you know, a swing voter, I may be someone who's a little more conservative, but that's what my district looks like. In fact, most of these folks, probably the exception of John Arthur Smith, who had kind of a more conservative district, actually were voting contrary to the interests of their district. So, for example, many of these districts are among the poorest counties, included most some of the poorest counties in the state, and yet the basic supports that these state senators should have been supporting, things like Medicaid buy-in, things like increasing the minimum wage, which would have benefited the very constituents they claimed to represent, they were coming down on the side of the business lobby. And you know, as you know, Steve, the chambers and the business lobbyists, there's a bunch of them. They're thick as thieves. There's probably 4 or 5 corporate lobbyists for every legislator, and they have a lot of resources, and they throw a lot of money around, and so for some of these senators, they were literally taking their lead from these groups.
So if you're going to go after these senators because they are taking money from these groups, what you know is they're going to be really well funded, right? And yep. So if you're going to go after them, you're going to have to be well funded. And if you're going to be well funded, you need good candidates. But to get good candidates, you need to be well funded. So I'm just wondering how you put those two things together and get good candidates and good funding.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I want to say that our campaign finance system is a disaster and needs to be changed. You know, so I support a lot more accountability, a lot more transparency in terms of where people get money, because it happens on both sides, right? And you know, some of my friends in the progressive movement may not like me saying that, but the truth is, we have to. If we did not have progressive donors, organizations who really said, like, we can't just hand this whole process over to Chevron and Exxon and CoreCivic and all these really wealthy corporations and lobbyists. If we didn't have people on our side, people who care about the environment, even labor groups that said we've got to invest in having a counterbalance to this corporate power, we would never have won these races, and we would never change the dynamic in not just New Mexico but all around the country. So yes, it costs money. First of all, you have to have a good, strong candidate who shares your values and who's going to work hard. That was the first thing that many of us were working on for years now. To their credit, and Naomi Martinez Parra is a great example of this, you know, just an absolutely fierce community leader in her community of Lordsburg, to take on literally the most powerful state senator who'd been there 30 years, who, you know, was beloved among a lot of Republicans, but among some kind of pretty powerful elected folks, and even some Democratic interests who were afraid to take him on. And she, to her credit, who had been very active in the Democratic Party, you know, been a vice chair of the Democratic Party, you know, kind of a working mom educator, she just said, look, I'm not afraid of taking on this machine person. You know, a lot of people try to talk her out of it. But she was fierce, and she ran a really strong, tough race in the primary, and she beat him. And we knew that she could beat him because he had been there a long time. Now, you know, a lot of the more corporate mainstream Democrats said, yeah, you know, you're going to lose that seat if you get somebody who's more progressive than John Arthur Smith. And in the end, we did. And that was something that both Naomi and the people who helped get her elected in the primary were aware of.
Well, I want to come back and ask you about that, but let me just mention first that this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. And my name is Stephen Spitz, and I have with me today Eric Griego. Eric is a former state senator. He's also the director of the Working Families Party, and he was very involved, as you've been hearing, in the Senate primaries. And Eric, I did want to ask you about that, because if you were to lose Smith's seat back, and if you were to lose, say, another seat, say, Clemente Sanchez's seat, you would have lost to Republicans two seats, and you'd really be, and you would have defeated two what you called corporate Democrats, but you'd really be back where you started from in terms of defeating that conservative coalition. So it seems to me like looking forward to the general election, you really needed to pick up a bunch of Democratic seats if you were going to actually make a difference in the legislature, correct?
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, and we did both, by the way. We not only had to get better Democrats, meaning Democrats who actually stuck to Democratic values, out of those primaries, fully realizing that some of those seats, and you're right, we lost that SD 35 race, so the Smith race in the general election, because, you know, part of it was the Trump phenomenon in the southern part of the state. Part of it was that, you know, in the end, a lot of those more conservative Democrats and independents went for the Republican in that race. And then the same thing happened in Clemente Sanchez's race. We helped elect a really progressive Pam Cordova, who was a great candidate. But in the end, they ended up going with another Republican. So we lost in the southern part of the state. We did lose two. We actually lost two seats, but we also were very active in the general. We're not talking about the general, but we also knew that if we challenged several in much more hospitable parts of the state where people were much more open to a progressive Democratic agenda here in the Albuquerque era, we knew that we could make up for those losses. So it was worth the risk. And people have a hard time understanding this. Like, why would you rather have a really kind of conservative, middle-of-the-road Democrat rather than Republican?
It's the whole big tent idea, right?
Yeah, well, it's a big tent idea, but this is where someone like me who's actually served knows how important it is to have a caucus that actually is relatively on the same page. Because when you don't, you have members of your own caucus who are essentially dragging the entire caucus to the right. You know, and that's what Smith did, that's what Papen did, that's what Clemente Sanchez did. So by just not even having them in the party, and that might affect your overall numbers, but the quality of the Democratic caucus, the progressive makeup of the state Senate, which is why we got all this good legislation done, was actually better, right? So there are some seats that just aren't worth holding, because if the person who holds that, and they're a quote-unquote Democrat, but they're essentially doing the bidding of their Republican allies, which is what happened with Smith. Smith was very closely, I mean, there's been all this lamenting about, oh, couldn't we have, you know, Senator Smith get along with the Republicans like we used to? Well, that was part of the problem. That's why we couldn't move legislation that was truly affecting and benefiting working families, is because at the end of the day, Senator John Arthur Smith was against investing in early childhood. He was against giving people who couldn't qualify for Medicaid some help getting health insurance. He was against things like paid sick leave for people. So it's better, as a Democrat, I'd say it's better to not have people essentially in your caucus who are so out of step with the rest of the party that they actually drag the party in a direction that doesn't reflect their core constituents. And that's why I think, and if you talk to Naomi Martinez Parra, even, you know, she, of course she was disappointed that she lost, but we all owe her a huge debt of gratitude. And she knew that was going to be a tough general election, but she's kind of like the Stacey Abrams of New Mexico. She did God's work. She did the work to really get rid of, in my opinion, the single biggest impediment to progressive change in the state Senate, and we've already seen it.
I wanted to ask you sort of a personal question, which is kind of like, you've brought up that you were a state senator, we've brought that up, and you've talked about how the coalition moved, and I guess my question is, why you? I mean, you were sailing along, you were, you know, very early in your life, you were a Albuquerque councilman, you then became very early in your life a Democratic senator. You were in a safe district. You could have probably stayed a senator for as long as you wanted. You were the director of Voices for Children. So playing sort of the inside game, you were being very successful. So why is it that you chose this route to sort of work on the outside and against your former, some of your former colleagues?
Well, this show is about the how we changed the state Senate with a lot of people who worked really hard and a lot of volunteers. But if you knew anything about my political career, I'm a Democrat and I'm proud of that. I'm a working families Democrat, and I began my career challenging entrenched Democratic establishment elected officials. My council seat, I took out a powerful incumbent council member who was aligned with big developers. I ran against a powerful Democratic mayor and lost, Marty Chavez, who, in my opinion, is part of that corporate coalition. And then I ran against the former majority whip, a powerful state senator, when I ran for state senate. So I've always been someone who believes if we're going to be true to our core values. I think of myself as an FDR Democrat. I mean, other than his work on Japanese internment, which I totally think was terrible. But on social policy and economic policy, on New Deal, on really holding corporate entities accountable and really fighting for the little guy, fighting for working families, that's the kind of Democrat I was. And many of our Democrats are not in that place. Regardless of what they say, that's not where they are. So I have always challenged the establishment corporate wing of the party. And that's a painful, you know, that's not a good way to necessarily get ahead. I was not part of the coalition when I was elected in 2008. Some of my colleagues chose to vote in a coalition with the Republicans, and they were all rewarded. And I'm not going to mention who they are, but suffice it to say that all of them have done pretty well politically. One of them's the chairman of a powerful committee right now. So I did not choose the easy insider path as an elected official. That was never my aspiration. I knew it would be painful, and I knew that if we really wanted to shake things up and do what was right by rank and file working families Democrats, that I was going to have to challenge power. And as you probably know, it made my own political career very, very difficult. Like, I absolutely had a hard time climbing the ranks of the state Senate, because I openly challenged Senator Smith in caucus and on the floor. And that's not how you get a lot of legislation passed. You do a lot better by being what I consider a go along to get along kind of legislator. And that's just not what I did. So I'm proud of my work. I'm proud of challenging him. And when I found out that on the inside, if I wasn't willing to sort of make some of those compromises, that I wasn't going to be as effective to my values. I don't judge anybody. They have to make their own political decisions. But that I figured out that on the outside, there was ways that we could hold people accountable. And I'm really, really proud that we helped lead that fight to get rid of some of the Democrats that call themselves Democrats.
I want to pick up on what you're saying, this philosophy that you're espousing, particularly with regard to the general election. But before I do that, let me mention that my name is Stephen Spitz. This is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. And with me today is Eric Griego. Eric is a former New Mexico State Senator. He's also the director of the Working Families Party, and he, along with a coalition of others, had a lot to do with changing the makeup of the New Mexico Senate. So given your political perspective that you've just described, you needed to pick up a lot of Democratic votes against, Democratic senators, but you weren't really willing to back those that weren't progressive enough, correct? So how many, you know, how did you actually do this? How many did you actually back in the general election?
So we had to try to make sure that those who stuck their neck out in the primaries could win, right? So we did not, we put most of our resources into helping Naomi in that very, very tough in the South race. And to be honest, like, we were just outspent by oil and gas, and the Republican machine was very powerful. We also helped Carrie Hamblin, who defeated Mary Kay Papin. So she was in good shape. That was a 60% plus Democratic district. So Carrie was a strong candidate. She won a really tough race. She ran a really good race. She's very impressive. If you've seen her in this session, her first session, she's a pro. She's really, really good. But we also wanted to make sure she got across the finish line. So we didn't want to ask these people to run primaries and then in the general say, like, good luck for you. You know, we didn't do that. So the other ones were, we tried to help. We tried to help Pam Cordova as much as possible. She had a very tough race. And again, Southern New Mexico, Valencia County was this really, I wouldn't call it an anomaly, but they overperformed in terms of Republicans. And a lot of that was the Trump phenomenon. And frankly, a lot of that was around very conservative, pro-life churches getting involved in that race.
So that's kind of interesting, because as much as this was a signal for liberal Democrats, the failure to repeal the criminal abortion statute, it was also very attractive in the general election for Republican candidates, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that was most true in that southern district, right? You know, and that's also why that congressional district, I think, flipped is there was just this tidal wave of very conservative, kind of pro-life, pro-gun kind of constituents who really showed up, and that meant that Pam Cordova, who also was a great candidate, didn't make it. That was a very close loss. I mean, much closer than Naomi's. But the good news is we were working with a lot of Democratic allies to make sure that we made up for it, and we more than made up for it. The good news is, you know, Harold Pope on the west side of Albuquerque, who's a pretty progressive, you know, former veteran, very had a great first session, just showed that he was a leader. First African-American elected to the state Senate. We helped him a lot, and he has proven to be just a great champion for a lot of issues. There were two or three other seats that we picked up that were Republican seats. We picked up a seat that a lot of folks thought was not winnable, but there's one of the sort of the brain trusts of the Republican caucus was Senator Bill Payne up in the Northeast Heights of Albuquerque, and he retired. And when he retired, that was an open seat. So we knew that if we got a good, strong candidate in that district, that we could win. And there was a great candidate who won there, Martin Hickey. The other really exciting upset was over in the north, in the sort of North Valley area, northwest part of the Albuquerque, where Katie Duhigg, who's a great, very smart attorney, ran and defeated a Republican incumbent. So in the end, we came out with a net gain of one. So we lost a couple of those seats, but my contention, I think those of us who worked on this really feel like the quality of the Democratic caucus has gotten much more progressive, much more focused on working families. And so it was worth a couple of losses in southern New Mexico, but we also gained, you know, three seats up here in the Albuquerque area. And we also held a swing seat. Senator Sapien, who often voted with that corporate coalition as well, retired, and we were able to help elect a really progressive Native American woman who's actually been great on most of our issues, Brenda McKenna, who worked for former Congresswoman, now Secretary of Interior Deb Haaland. So it's the Democratic caucus now is so much better, and you saw that in the legislation that came out, not just repealing that draconian anti-choice law, but passing paid sick leave, passing the constitutional amendment that will actually invest in kids for the next 10 or 11, that for the next generation, but it had been held up for 10 or 11 years, that passed, even though all of this stuff didn't make it out of the session, they also passed significant investment in working families by passing the working families tax credit increase. They increased the low-income comprehensive tax rebate, which is LICTR. Those are issues that Voices led on, New Mexico Voices for Children. So had we not made the Democratic caucus better, even if we lost a couple of people in the South, made them more progressive, more in touch with working families, we would not have passed all this, I think, what is arguably the most progressive slate of legislation that we're really going to help
the working families in New Mexico, kids, families, people who can't afford health care. I think this is probably the best session they've had, certainly in a generation, if not ever.
Yeah, I guess I would throw in expanding liquor licenses, banning animal trapping, the civil rights law, the school impact aid, federal school impact aid going to actually needy districts and not being taken away from them. It seems, I mean, as you view it, I mean, how many of those things would actually have passed in a prior legislative session? How many of them would have gone through the Senate?
So that's a great point. Like, there's a number of other bills we haven't talked about. Like the other one that passes is this SB 112, which Senator Stewart championed, that she worked with Representative Rubio and Representative Stansberry on, which creates a just transition model for how we get beyond the oil and gas economy, right? That would not have passed. That would have been dead on arrival, because you know the corporate coalition that we helped defeat in the primary, they were essentially funded by big oil and gas. The other one you mentioned, the Civil Rights Act, which really is holding all elected officials, but especially law enforcement officials, to a higher standard of accountability. That would have never even made it out of committee.
So we're nearing the end of the show, Eric, and I just want to get your take on where you think New Mexico politics is headed in the future. You know, one could say that the blue wave for the Senate could have been a product of, first of all the mail-in voting, because you got tremendous Democratic turnout, more than usual. And also there was a lot of anti-Trump fever. So where do you think this is a one-off, or do you think that New Mexico politics is really headed toward a new progressive era?
Well, that's a great question, Stephen. As you know, these things, for every action, there's a reaction. So I feel like people who are really, really energized on the right by some of the policies around gun control or choice or tax increases for wealthier folks, or any of these issues that to them are threatening their worldview, they're going to be more mobilized next time. So this isn't sort of a permanent kind of phenomenon that we had a good year last year. I think next year is going to be tough. So we've got our work cut out for us. I don't think it's a permanent phenomenon. I think it was hard fought, and we're going to have to keep the fight up.
We are going to have to leave it there. Eric Griego, thanks for your time. Thanks also to my producer, Kristen Klum. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of the show are available wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening. See you next time.